I feel so strongly that email will never die. I think cold calling will really never die. It might not be the channel of conversion, but because prospects are receiving these emails, they're opening them. They see your name, they see your company, they know who you are. They might be ignoring you, but they know who you are. And so by the time you find them on a different channel, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's voicemail, whether it's cold call, they're going to have more awareness and they're likely to be a little bit more receptive to having that conversation with you, as long as your email was targeted.
Welcome to another episode of Go-To-Market Mavericks, the podcast about go-to-market innovators, risk takers, and leaders, and the unique strategies, tactics, and playbooks they and their teams use to succeed. On with me today, as our guest, is Melissa Adamo, a director of sales development at Seismic Software, a leader in the enablement space. She's focused on coaching her team to build quality pipeline by leveraging data-driven insights and using an omni-channel approach for outbound outreach. She's also passionate about uncovering growth opportunities for her team, pushing them to develop outside of the SDR organization. Having recently moved from Boston to Austin, she's appropriately named the 2024 her year of discomfort. She's focused on pushing herself to try new things and get out of her comfort zone. She loves exploring coffee shops, paddleboarding, playing soccer, and she also has a four-year-old French bulldog named Fred. Melissa, I'm excited to have you on today.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me. So I'm going to kind of take everybody back from the start. So I went to college in Boston. I went to Suffolk University. And I was really passionate about business, but I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do. And I graduated college in 2019. And so sales programs were very new to colleges and universities. Now they're very popular and I keep hiring people that went through sales programs. But my graduation year was the first year that that Suffolk even had a professional selling minor. So I took a couple of sales classes and I quickly recognized that sales was something I wanted to do more professionally. I had actually started my career at a very small fintech mortgage startup. We were at the seed stage when I had started, and I was one of the first 15 people working there. And I quickly realized that I would be helping out our new hires and training people. And I found a lot of passion in that, while at the same time, I absolutely love being at the top of the leaderboard. I find myself to be somebody who's extremely competitive. And so from very early on, I had told my first manager, hey, when something opens up in leadership, like, please consider me for the role and tell me what I can do today to get to that next step. And so Own Up was the name of the company. We grew from 15 to 150 people, and I left when we were at our Series C. And so I had kind of gone from this very quiet sales intern to somebody that led all of our sales training and onboarding. And somewhere in between, I was managing a sales team. But that was a really pivotal point for my career because it validated that I did have what it took to kind of make it in sales leadership. And I was even more motivated to kind of continue what I was doing. And because I was very passionate about like early career growth and development, it's where I identified that I wanted to be in sales development. So from working at Own Up, I ended up at a company called EverQuote. And so I was there for about a year overseeing the entire BDR organization. And then through somebody that I actually went to college with, Seismic came about. And so I've been here for about 2.5 years now, maybe a little bit more. And I oversee our West Coast sales development team today. So it's something that I absolutely love. I'm super passionate about coaching people that are very early on in their career. And then also just like doing great things for the business. I think it's a really exciting time to be at Seismic. We just got voted a leader from the Forrester Wave within sales enablement. And so understanding we're such an innovative company, I think it's a really cool time to be in tech and to learn about enablement as this industry grows and develops too.
loved hearing about your background. Would love to hear your perspective for those who are earlier on in their careers. They find themselves in like a BDR, SDR role. What are some of the signals that may indicate that you should maybe pursue a path in leadership versus pursuing the like IC, you know, SDR to sales exec to, you know, enterprise sales path, right? Like, what are some of the things you, and also like from your managers and leadership position now, what are some of those signals you see in others that kind of indicate maybe which direction people should consider kind of walking down?
Yeah. So for me personally, I loved more than anything being at the top of the leaderboard. And I felt that way for a very long time. I was competitive with myself. If I had a month where I was like number two or number three, I was kicking myself. And money has always been a large motivation for me. Over time, what I had realized, this was my leading indicator, I found so much more excitement and passion and joy when I realized I could help somebody else get there with me. And I loved bringing people along for the ride. And so that's when I'm talking to other SDRs or people that are early on in their like leadership career, finding out what matters to them is extremely important. Because if you do just want to be an individual contributor and you can't work through the highs and the lows that you might go through within leadership, it might not be the best fit for you. But if you do have a passion for coaching others and coaching people to success and pushing people to unlock potential that they didn't even know existed, then leadership's absolutely for you. And I'm sure, you know, you could ask 100 leaders and they might say slightly different versions of the same thing, but it's really just helping people succeed and unlock their potential at the end of the day that solidifies that this is where I want to be right now.
I know that there's people listening who are wondering the same, trying to figure out which way do I go. And, you know, I guess we can caveat that with, you know, this isn't a one-way door. You can take a step forward and then also go, you know, do an about face and move the other direction as well. But really good to hear your perspective on what are some of those indicators that might suggest that, hey, like maybe you should consider leadership as a path. But you also mentioned this drive to be on top of the leaderboard and, you know, that money was a motivator. And ultimately that's associated with results, right? And here we're, you know, on a podcast, GoToMarket Mavericks, where we're talking about, you know, the things that are helping people achieve those results and those outsized outcomes. I'm curious to hear, you know, what are some of the things that you've seen either at Seismic or in the past that have, you know, really like stood out as like tactics, approaches to kind of like really like helping people crush their number and get to that top of the leaderboard?
I'll get into tactics in a second, but I'll take a step back and talk about traits that people embody that can also really help them get there. Because okay, I find myself going through a lot of interviews and people will always ask me, what does good look like on your team? And how can I set myself apart as an SDR at Seismic? And the couple of things that I think really help people go from like good to great are being coachable, right? Being able to take feedback from your peers, being able to take feedback from different leaders, being able to crowdsource it too, right? Like not just hiding in your own shell, like being coachable, asking for feedback and always wanting to strive to be better, being 1% better every single day. Being competitive, right? Like this is a yep. sales job and you have to be competitive in one way or the other. If you don't have something motivating you, it's probably not the best fit for you. And it doesn't have to be money, but you have to be competitive in some way, shape, or form. And then I think I'm going to lump this word together, but like persistence and consistency, like you have to be on top of it. You have to be on top of your prospects. You have to follow up. You can't always take no for an answer. And you have to be consistent with your outreach and consistent with like meeting expectations. And what I mean by that is, you know, cold calling sucks, right? Like nobody wants to do it. You could have a month where you hit 200% of your number. And if you take your foot off the gas and you're not consistent, it's going to get a lot harder that next month. And so we have to like be on top of it day in and day out, whether it's a really bad day or a really good day. We want to make sure that we're following through with the actions that we're supposed to, so that we're constantly up and to the right. So those are some of the like traits that I see really, really good SDRs embody. And then from a tactics perspective, there's two things that like come to mind, or there's one thing that really comes to mind, but it's like, I'll just say two. It's like being scrappy. And so it's like not giving up, always have the I'm going to figure it out mindset. And then I'll also say, this is something we talk about on our team often, being resourceful, right? Going to find different ways to succeed in any way possible, leaning on your network, leaning on people internally, trying new things all the time, and being okay if something doesn't work out, right? But just always putting yourself out there to try something new. The more you can lean on your resources, the more you can create your own resources, the better you'll be long term. And I think those are skills that will really take you, they'll really take you far, and not just within the sales development role, but in other parts of your career as well.
Really resonate with like that resourcefulness trait. I've seen that as well as the competitive spirit, absolutely essential. I'm wondering, you know, right now, 2024 is not like 2021, and teams are facing, we all have big numbers. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what things are, what's happening with Brit Seismic, but we have big ambitions. If you're doing it right, you talked about the consistency. You know, there's so many things that you could be focused on in a given day. How are you, the best SDRs today, getting in front of all the distractions that could be coming their way? Like, how do you kind of help them fend those off?
That's an incredible question. And I think it's a huge challenge, especially for SDRs that maybe like just graduated college. You're mm-hmm. in this complete new world and you're trying to figure out balance, like a work-life balance. You're trying to figure out how do you do well? How do you hit your quota? It's crazy because there are so many distractions. Obviously, like social media is everywhere, and you have to stay focused. And so I give my team, I always like to say, I put guardrails in place and I let you figure out the rest, right? It's like, we have to cold call, we have to email, we have to do the actual activity metrics, but when and how you do it, I'm going to let you do that. And I think the same applies to organization, where I do let people figure it out in terms of what works best for them. I have some people that like love a tool like Notion. I have some people that love their OneNote. I personally stay on top of like my calendar, and I think that that's really important for me to be focused. But above all, it's like you have to find your way to be organized in sales, to stay on top of every single thing that you need to get done. Because if you start to become disorganized and then you don't do your activity, it can become overwhelming very quickly. So I like to make sure that people put those habits in place early on. So just transparently, I'm not the strictest on what they're doing to stay organized, but it's a matter of how are you staying organized? Because I try to like meet people where they're at on my team. A couple people that leverage spreadsheets today to just like stay on top of their tasks and their follow-ups. Obviously, we have sales engagement tools that we leverage as well. But I try to meet my team where they're at as much as possible. But I think it's the number one thing to figure out as soon as you start a job in sales, because you get thrown into the fire very quickly and it'll become sink or swim. So if you don't get that, sorted, it'll be hard to come back from it.
You mentioned, we got an email, we got a cold call. You mentioned a few of the channels that, you are all, leaning into. If our listeners are paying attention on LinkedIn or elsewhere, whatever watering hole you hang out around, you've likely heard that the end of email is here. Google is making things harder every day. I'm curious if you have any perspectives or counter perspectives on any of those very strong proclamations that are out there today.
Yeah, I feel so strongly that email will never die. I think cold calling will really never die, but I just don't see a world where email is going to die. I think it can be a lesser priority over time, right? I see that. I have seen open rates go down. But the reason why I feel so strongly about email not going away is it's still how we communicate with other people every single day, right? And I really like this analogy that my boss actually gave to my team. This was maybe like a year ago, around the time of the Super Bowl, right? You see like a bunch of Super Bowl ads. You might see one for like Lay's potato chips. You're not leaving the middle of the Super Bowl. You're not missing the halftime show to go out and buy a bag of Lay's potato chips, right? But next time like you go to the store, you might be hungry for a bag of potato chips. And because you saw that ad so many different times, or even just one time, you're more likely to reach for that bag of potato chips, that specific brand.
Yeah.
And so like with email, it might not be the channel of conversion, but because prospects are receiving these emails, they're opening them. They see your name. They see your company. They know who you are. They might be ignoring you, but they know who you are. And so by the time you find them on a different channel, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's voicemail, whether it's cold call, they're going to have more awareness and they're likely to be a little bit more receptive to having that conversation with you, as long as your email was targeted and right. Specific with an ask.
To carry the analogy over, you know the ads that absolutely stunk and the ones that won. So you need to have a winning ad to carry the analogy forward. Really love that breakdown of email as a channel of conversion versus a channel of exposure. Typically, like when you change the objective of a thing, what goes into the creation of that thing likely can and should be rethought. From first principles, I'm curious, like, how does framing email as a channel of exposure maybe change the way you think about crafting your emails from the subject line to the content to the offer? Is that something you've thought about, or are there things that you'd like to experiment with, you know, based on, you know, that hypothesis that, you know, email can and should be a channel of exposure in some cases versus just being a channel of conversion?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question. And I'm like very big on like there, like everything's subjective in sales. Like most things are not black and white. There's always going to be a little bit of gray area. For us, I'll start with like the subject line. And there's so much data out there that it's very hard to sift through it and figure out what makes the most sense for you, especially because data around emails and open rates is very specific to industries and who those like ICP personas that
totally, yep.
people are targeting. So that's why I think it's very challenging to actually determine like what is relevant to you. But when it comes to subject lines, like my team is very big on short and sweet. We don't want to have a full sentence in a subject line. I think that really matters. And then in terms of making email either a channel of conversion or exposure, the first two things that people see are your subject line and probably those first 8 to 10 words that you're sending out. So you want to make sure that your subject line is catchy and that your first 8 to 10 words are not just a hi, how are you? Because if that is the case, they're probably not going to open it, so it won't become that channel of exposure. My team particularly, like we are very focused on not pushing features and function. We want to show prospects how we solve challenges and add value within their day-to-day. By way of doing that, we can kind of get them thinking about how Seismic might fit into their tech stack in the future. If we just push features and we don't really make it matter to the prospect, why would they care, right? I say this all the time to my team, but why does it matter to them, right? Why does it matter to this person specifically? Why does it matter now? Because if you can't make it matter, if you can't make what you're selling matter to your prospect, they're not going to take time out of their busy day to meet with us. So that message holds true in our emails. It holds true in our cold calls. It holds true in like the videos and the voice notes that we're sending out over LinkedIn. And so regardless of the channel, I think those things carry on through every channel of outreach that we're leveraging today.
what I picked up from that was, ideally in either case, conversion or exposure, you have to have some sort of good subject line. That first intro line needs to be solid. But like, if you nail those, then you get the opportunity to present your case essentially, and like,
exactly,
flash your billboard, flash your ad, right? So it seems like a necessary but not sufficient step to have email be that channel of exposure is to have that subject line and that first intro line be absolutely stellar and highly relevant. How do you improve the relevance of your email? You talked about making it matter to them, which to me just screams like relevance.
Yeah. There's several different ways that we'll go about this depending on what we know about the account or what we know about the person. And so I take this twofold, right? Because we really do push our SDRs to partner with their account executives, to partner with their team in general, to do research on the account, right? If we're going to be calling somebody, if we're going to be doing outreach, we should know how this account makes money. We should know what are the challenges within the industry of where like ever the account is, whether it's biotech, whether it's manufacturing, what are the challenges the industry faces? And then we should have an idea or a hypothesis of where Seismic might fit in. Once we understand what could be going on at that account, we'll be able to have targeted messaging. Now, where what we know about the prospect fits in is, and or maybe just like on a deeper level, is have we had previous conversations with this prospect before? Have we met with other leaders at this account before? Are other competitors of this account customers of Seismic today? And what are those use cases that we might be able to speak to create a form of FOMO, or fear of missing out, as I'm sure most people are aware of that term. I guess the last thing that I'd say is, if that prospect is very active on LinkedIn, maybe they have a very well-written bio, maybe they're constantly posting, maybe they're a thought leader, we probably want to add an additional layer of personalization based on what they've given us on their LinkedIn profile. And so we'll do several different layers of outreach to improve it over time. And so if we don't know much about the person, we'll just be a little bit more account and industry focused. If we do have information on the person, we'll always layer that context in, because context is always going to help us win at the end of the day. And there's never a reason not to use it, in my opinion.
I'm curious to hear your perspective. What do you find is easier to get, like the person level insights or the content, the organizational level insights? And like, where are some of like the places you're going to like grab those insights?
That's a good question. I personally feel like building an account based message and getting information about the account is going to be more time consuming upfront, but it's going to save you time on the back end, because once you craft that message, it's a little bit more scalable as you complete outreach to all the personas within the account. When it comes to crafting personalization for a person or like one specific prospect, we're probably going to spend a little bit more time on that. And we always tell people like, don't spend too much time on this. Don't spend too much time on this, because you never know who's even going to open it or if they're ever going to pick up the phone. But it's like when somebody gives us a key and they just have all of the things that they're passionate about on their LinkedIn and their work history, it's like we kind of just go off on a tangent, like building this beautiful message about it. So I think like account-based message and business focuses take time to craft up, but long-term, it's a little bit more efficient and it saves us a bit more time once we do that research.
Got it. Yeah. Love that framing. We've talked heavily about email, a little bit about cold calling. I know you're an advisor at Nooks, so cold calling is a thing that's probably near to your heart. But I did actually want to pivot a little bit and talk about LinkedIn. You mentioned that LinkedIn is a channel that you guys are investing in, spending time on, from a research standpoint. Is there anything tactically that you guys are doing there that um, is generating like outsized, you know, returns or things that you're really new things you've learned as you've leaned into LinkedIn as a channel?
I'm glad you asked this question because the topic of LinkedIn outreach, I continue to see it on my LinkedIn feed. We're talking about it in team meetings, and it's something that my team loves. And I'm so excited and so happy when I see them winning on LinkedIn. It's something we've been focused on for a couple quarters now. And so I think the reason why we pivoted to LinkedIn as a channel is, one, getting in touch with prospects and booking meetings is really hard. Being an SDR is a hard job, right? There's no surprise there. Additionally, there's so many different channels that you can leverage to reach out to a prospect, whether it's text, whether it's call, email, voicemail, LinkedIn, but we don't know which ones our prospects prefer, right? Like, they're not going to tell us, they're not going to put it on a billboard. And so we have to make a well-educated guess as to how to meet our prospects where they're at. And I think this is where LinkedIn comes into play. And I know I previously mentioned to be a really good SDR, you have to be resourceful, you have to be scrappy. And so now kind of enter this notion of social selling, right? I think where LinkedIn does really well is because we're being scrappy, we're being resourceful, we're working different and we're being different. But I also think why LinkedIn is successful is because it puts a face to the name, right? Like, you can actually see who you're reaching out to. LinkedIn is a form of social media. And I find that, like, after people are like maybe either on their lunch break or, you know, they're home and they're like done with work, they're mindlessly scrolling. And so they can see those messages that are coming in. And then additionally, VPs, directors, people that SDRs are reaching out to get so many emails and cold calls every single day, but they don't get a lot of LinkedIn video messaging. They don't get a lot of LinkedIn voice notes, which is why LinkedIn is becoming a much more prominent channel for my team to use, because we're being different. We're meeting our prospects where they're at, which is their phones. We know we're all glued to our phones, and we're converting at a high rate. We're turning LinkedIn meetings into pipeline, into ARR for our business. And so it's something that's really exciting, and we're constantly iterating on it. But this is how an SDR or an AE, anybody in sales, can be different and work different and find their prospects and engage with them. And you can engage with them by liking their posts or commenting on their posts as well to, you know, increase awareness of who you are and the message that you're trying to get across. But I do genuinely think LinkedIn is the place to be right now. I believe that people are sleeping on it. And if there's one area that I'm pushing my SDRs to be different, it's LinkedIn. Like, I think that will become a game changer the more it becomes more wildly like accepted and adopted across the board. So I know I just went off on a tangent there.
No, loved it. I would love to dig in a little bit. So you mentioned, at the very top of your talking points there, you mentioned LinkedIn video and LinkedIn voice note. For the uninformed and uninitiated, would you mind sharing with us like what that is and how it's being used by your team to your advantage? You talked about being different. I'm assuming that to some extent that voice note video tactic is something that's helping you break through the noise. Can you give us some context behind like what that looks like and why you think it's working?
Yeah. So what my team will do on a regular basis is they will identify prospects that they've yet to get in contact with, right? Maybe they've tried cold calling, maybe they've tried emailing, yet to get in contact with them, but they recognize, hey, this is a really good person. And if I can book a meeting here, I know it's going to become a qualified opportunity, right? So they identify who their key prospects are. And then the first step is obviously sending that connection request. You can't send a video without actually being connected to them on LinkedIn. So this is a little bit of like a waiting game. But once you get that connection request, what my team will do is naturally either send that video or that voice note over. And we right now, a lot of people will leverage, I think the app is called Teleprompter. So when you're sending that video from your phone, that's what most people are using. The words that you're trying to send will just like pop right up on the screen so that they're maintaining eye contact. And so while we're sending again this video or this voice note, we find it to be a way to send a personalized message across that people will want to engage with, because it's very apparent that when you're sending again a video, you're putting a lot more effort into it, and it is a very personalized message. So we'll make sure that we're sending messages around a minute or less. But it's become an incredible way for us to engage with our prospects, to put that face to the name. And then I think the thing that we do also enjoy is LinkedIn does give us the opportunity to see once a prospect has viewed that message, so we can naturally just follow up from there. One thing that I would like to add is, on top of making sure that we are reaching out to our prospects that we genuinely believe, if we can get them to a meeting, like this will convert into qualified pipeline for us, we also want to make sure that those are people that are active on LinkedIn, right? If somebody's not active on LinkedIn, if their last post was 4 years ago, that's probably not the best prospect to reach out to. But if you are connected with somebody on LinkedIn, you can see how often they're actively engaging with other people's content, with other people's posts, how often they're posting themselves. And so I would really leverage that as a leading indicator whether you should be doing outreach or not to this person, because while LinkedIn voice note and video is a great channel to lean on, you also want to make sure that you're not wasting time with your outreach. And so just take a glance at that before you determine if you should send that person a voice or a video note as well.
I'm curious, like, how are you guys doing any experimentation around cold calling and, you know, trying to improve how you show up on the phones contextually and that your message is resonating quickly, because you only have so much time on a cold call before the prospect loses interest?
Yeah, that's a great question too. And so I will say right now, like, cold call is still probably like 90% where we're converting conversations into meetings, right? It's 90% of where those meetings are coming from. And I'm very big on, I said this before, like, sales is extremely subjective. And when you're speaking to somebody on the phone, when you're leveraging a talk track, it has to sound right to you. It has to feel right to you, right? We do call blitzes all the time where the entire team hops on, we'll leverage Nooks, and they can listen to each other call. And so, like, I'll just tell you about a time where we had an SDR that leveraged his own personal talk track. It was his own personal opener, and it worked great for him. And it was so great for him that other people on our team started to use it. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that wasn't that it was a bad opener. It was a great opener. And I can't remember, like, what it was, but every single person on my team has their one-liners, and I love their one-liners because we get a kick out of them. But the openers that other people on our team tried to use, like, they weren't natural, right? So when you're speaking on the phone, like, what you're saying has to feel natural to you. What works for one person won't necessarily work for others. I think it's okay if you're super direct. I think it's okay if you're super bubbly. But whatever you're saying, aside from, like, it needing to be accurate, it has to feel natural to you at all times. And so when it comes to, like, the talk track on cold calls, very similar to what I said about LinkedIn and email, we want to make sure that we're leveraging an account-based message. We want to make sure that we are adding in every ounce of context that we have, because context is key. And when you're on the phone with somebody, at most, you might catch somebody for 4 minutes, right? And you're probably not going to catch them on the phone twice, and you're definitely not going to catch them three times live. And so you want to make sure that you're converting them and giving them the right information that they need to agree to that meeting when you have them. And then I'd say, like, just to pivot a little bit when it comes to, like, cold calling, what we really use and focus on when it comes to, like, feedback, aside from, like, a talk track perspective, is I really like the data. I'm very big on how data impacts the way that we cold call. And so what I mean by that is, And we, again, use Nooks. I'm sure there's a lot of other great platforms out there that companies use today. But when my team's cold calling, we have like benchmark metrics that we'll look at pretty often. And if somebody on my team is making, you know, 500 calls a week, 100 a day is pretty standard for us. And if they haven't had many conversations, right? I want to look into what are the area codes they're using? What is the time of day that they're calling? Are they calling mobile numbers? Are they calling work numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're not having conversations, then you can't book meetings. So we want to like peel back the layer and get to the root of what's happening first and foremost. Now, if you're having conversations and those conversations aren't leading to meetings, then there's two different things that we can look at. One, are you calling the right personas, right? Are you actually calling the right people? Are you getting too high too soon, right? If we don't know anything about the account, it is possible to get too high too soon. Are you getting way too low, right? Those things matter. And then the second thing is it could be, what are you actually saying on the phone? And so if people are having a lot of conversations and they're not converting, my best recommendation to anybody listening would be, if you're an individual contributor, go listen to your peers, right? Listen to them on the phone and either get that validation that, hey, I'm doing everything correct, or hey, maybe I need to tweak something. In addition to like learning from your peers, go talk to your manager, ask to do some call blocks together, ask to do some call reviews if you record your calls, right? Feedback is really important for growth. And sometimes listening back to calls is really scary. Nobody likes it, but that's how you grow. That's how you get better, is like listening to yourself, working through that like cringe factor of hearing everything you say. But once you get ahead of it, I promise like you'll be able to work through it and you'll 100% like improve from a success perspective. And your peers want to see you succeed. Your managers definitely want to succeed. And they'll certainly help you from a growth perspective there. So that would be my recommendation if your conversations aren't converting to meetings.
I'm curious, as maybe like a parting thought, there's a lot of great voices out there today on, you know, speaking of LinkedIn, on LinkedIn, a lot of people trying new things, innovative approaches. Is there anybody that you, either internally at Seismic or externally, kind of follow or keep tabs on, just for your own education and, you know, people that others should frankly keep track of and consume content from?
Yeah, there's a couple that are top of mind. I really do like 30 Minutes to President's Club. My team will send that note out and we'll actually talk about it because we don't agree with everything, but we like it a lot. And so it's good to have to, it's a great like newsletter and podcast to create an open dialogue. And then I'd also say, this is maybe more from like a leadership perspective, but I really like Sarah from Pareto. I like, Gabrielle Blackwell. I think she puts out some awesome content, and, I'm trying to think of like who else that's top of mind, but I do really like all of the like content and posts that people are putting out there on LinkedIn. And my team is always sending it to each other. And again, we're always talking about it because there's so much information that's out there and different people have different takes. So we are very heavy on LinkedIn, but those are the ones that are top of mind right now.
You know what?
I'll add one more, and this is like internal, but like, I really like, I guess this isn't internal, but like two people that also come to mind is one of my old bosses, Mike Connolly. He now runs his own nonprofit that's like Pay Forward Coaching, and he kind of walks through the process of what it means to like lead a nonprofit coaching business. Mm-hmm. And so if anybody out there is like struggling, looking for a new job, I think that's a really great avenue to lean down. And then what I've also realized is I love when leaders humanize themselves and they explain their own challenges. They talk through like how they prioritize time with their family and their friends. Because when I was younger, I thought I needed to be a workhorse 24/7 and that I wouldn't get anywhere if I didn't prioritize like my family and friends. And I feel like Toby Carrington, who's our chief business officer, makes posts about that stuff quite often. And so he's a great guy, and I like really like seeing those posts.
Love it. And I guess as a final piece before we kind of say see you later on the podcast, are there any like experiments or things that your team is like excited to run or things that you're looking to try that might inspire others to, you know, try similar or check out other tactics and approaches to get, you know, driving numbers and pipeline?
Oh God, I'm trying to think of something right now. Like, we are very big on like social selling. So LinkedIn, voice note and video, I will say that. Additionally, if you're trying to get in touch with a prospect, engage with them on LinkedIn, engage with them on the channels that they use most. You can ask your teammates and you can ask your peers, hey, would you mind liking this person's post? Would you mind commenting on this post? I'm trying to gain exposure from this person. Not to be like spammy, right? We don't want to do that, but it genuinely helps. We're showing that person love. We're showing that person support. And hopefully like what we put in, we'll get out of it. So that's something that I would definitely recommend trying if you're not doing that already.
Love that, like the surround sound approach where you're getting multiple people from your company. So to follow up and not to follow up, to interact with your posts, to show up so that your company becomes top of mind when you're reaching out. Great. Well, this has been lots of fun. Where can people get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach out if they have questions regarding the content we've gone over?
Yeah, I think we'll stay on brand and I'll say LinkedIn. Certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me. It's just my name, Melissa Adamo. I love a LinkedIn message. I love a video. I love a voice note. I might not always be the first person to answer it, but if you're persistent, if you stay on top of me, I will get back to you. I can promise you that.
Awesome. Well, Melissa, again, thank you so much. This has been a good time. And to all you listening, this has been another episode of GoToMarket Mavericks.